Hey, everyone. First, before we say anything, I want to thank the elders here and Ray. He's not here. He's working or something. I want to thank you guys. I know that you hear this every Wednesday when a student comes up to speak, but I want you to understand something. This program means a lot to us college students. I mean, it means a lot. The 3 years that I've spent here at Freed have been so encouraging and so spiritually uplifting because I got to come to Henderson every Wednesday and hear one of my peers share something that I needed to hear. So I just want to thank you for that. So without further ado, hi, I'm Michael. I'm from Chattanooga, Tennessee, except for the past few weeks I've been called out. My residency is not in Chattanooga, Tennessee. It's actually right over the state line in Georgia because property taxes are cheaper and my dad's a cheapskate. So I am technically from the terrible state of Georgia. I love Tennessee, so that's the only reason I say that. I hope I didn't offend anybody. But so there's that. I go to Freed, right across the street over there. I'm a finance and Bible major. I plan on, after graduating, getting my financial planner licensure. So if you need your retirement managed, you know who to call. This topic that Ray's really picked for the entire semester has been awesome. We learned a ton about how God encounters His people through using people, through using Himself, through just His voice. I mean, it's ranged from the gentle whisper or from the burning bush or as we heard last week, just Christ Himself. And today we're gonna look at a way that God encountered His people the best way that God could. The best way that God could show people that there was a God and He was there and that He cared and that He loved His people. We're going to look at how Jesus encountered people. Before we really go anywhere with this lesson, we won't learn anything tonight, myself included, because there's so much more that I plan on learning tonight. We won't learn anything unless we go ahead and we establish right now that we are not perfect. We are sinners. We are not enough without Jesus Christ dying for us and giving us a purpose in life. If you think you have a purpose that doesn't involve Jesus, you're wrong. And I want to establish that first thing before we go anywhere, before we even crack open the Bible tonight. I just want you to know that. You're imperfect, and if you're imperfect, I'm definitely imperfect. So, without further ado, I want to talk about how you're perceived. Like I said, I grew up in Chattanooga. I went to school I went to public school up until high school, and man, I was not perceived as like an athlete by any means. I'm still not perceived as an athlete, clearly. But in the sixth grade, people would perceive me as the kid who weighed 100 plus pounds. True story. 100 pounds in the sixth grade. I was a whopper. Towards the sixth grade, same body stature, probably added on about 75 pounds, but add a Greg Brady perm to it, and that's how people perceived me then. So that's also a true story. I'd have pictures up here, but I'd just rather not do that to myself. You can come ask me later. But I want you to think about how people perceive you. All over the board tonight, there's something about you that people understand about you, that people automatically associate you with. Whether that be your social club, whether you're running for president. By the way, voting is still open. My vote went to Garrettson and Moore, 2015, 2016. But anyways, There are so many things that about you that just set the standard in people's mind, just automatically associate you with how they think about you. I want you to think about that for yourself. I want you to figure out whatever it is. Just be honest with yourself. Not the typical, you know, young person in church. Well, I just really think that I'm just defined by my good heart. No, be objective with yourself. If you are defined by your good heart, that's great. I would love to figure that out. And I would love to to be on your level, but I'm not. If you want my answer today, I'm defined as somebody who's scared. I'm defined as somebody who's always worried about something. I'm defined as somebody who cannot stand failure. I'm defined as somebody who can't let go of guilt. I'm nothing special. I'm just here. And I want you to objectively figure out what it is in other people's mind that make you the way you are. Tonight we're going to talk about an encounter that Jesus had with the governor, Pontius Pilate. And we all know the plot, the scene, the wherever we are right now. But I want to look first where Jesus was before he had this encounter with somebody. First, Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane. If you've ever read the high prayer, the prayer that Jesus lifts up to God in the book of John, I encourage you to do it. That shows so much about Jesus' character and so much about the passion he has for his Father. But Jesus was praying so much that, I mean, the scripture says that blood was pouring from his face. He was sweating so much. He was so nervous. He was so anxious. He was so scared about what was going to happen to him that he's bleeding. I mean, whether that be metaphorically, some people say that was true. Either way, you can see Jesus' fear in his words when he talks to God. Jesus was betrayed by someone who he thought was his best friend. And we seem to put a lot of blame on Peter, right? Because who would ever say, Lord, I would never deny you. Just never. I would always stand next to you no matter what happens. But then just see you. As soon as somebody comes in. And all of his disciples, all of his apostles, gone. He was by himself. I don't know about you, but that's one of my worst fears. Is standing in the face of trial by myself. Man, I can't do it. But Jesus didn't have a choice. On this earth, as far as people in the flesh goes, he didn't have a choice. He stood by himself. And he stood alone, and he took every last bit of it. Jesus was shackled, and he was bound. He was beaten by the Roman soldiers. Just before we go any further, Jesus didn't even deserve that. Do you ever think for a second that you deserve what Jesus gave to you? Just let the thought, you don't have to answer, but do you ever think for a second that you deserve anything that Jesus Christ has ever done for you? Or do you think you deserve the gift that he gave? Or even up to this point, we're looking 2-3 hours into Christ's process of his crucifixion. He didn't even deserve to be alone. So Jesus is bound, and he's taken before Pontius Pilate. And whenever we read scripture about Pilate, I feel like we always look at it and we go, man, Pilate is just... like, he's so accusatory, he's so official, he's so, you know, I'm in charge, you're my prisoner. We're going to be jumping around a lot in the Gospels, so if you have, like, some attendance cards, some marked Bibles, now's the time to use it. But I've read these scriptures so many times, and I can't sit there and I can't think that Pontius Pilate was accusing Jesus of anything. So today we're going to talk just right off the bat. Jesus' encounter with Pilate was convicting Pilate. You see, it was never Jesus it was never Pilate who was on the judgment seat deciding Jesus' fate. From the get-go, from the minute that Jesus entered Pilate's courts, it was Jesus who was sitting on the judgment seat deciding Pilate's fate. And he still sits on the judgment seat. It doesn't matter how high and mighty you think you are in this world. You're never going to be on the judgment seat. You're never going to be the one calling the shots, making someone's fate. Because your life is like a flower in the wind. If you want to go ahead and turn in your Bibles, we're going to look first at John chapter 18. When I say we're going to flip around in the Gospels, we're going to stay in John chapter, for the book of John, we'll stay in chapter 18. John chapter 18, verses 33 through 36. I just want to read this for you. So Pilate entered his headquarters again and called Jesus and said to him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Do you say this of your own accord, or did you say it because it was said to you about me?" Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief of priests have delivered you over to me. What have you done? Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. My kingdom is not of this world." I feel like, upon first impression, Pilate sees somebody who's been beaten. He's bound. He's just a carpenter's son. He's heard rumors of him. He's heard rumors of the great Jesus who had come to just change the world, to show that he was the Son of God. He'd heard the rumors, I'm sure. But he just saw somebody normal. I can't help but think that when Pilate saw this poor, bruised up, beaten, alone, hated man, there's no way he could look at him and go, "You're a criminal." There's just no way. And I feel like these questions that Pilate gives him, it's almost like he's trying to find a reason. Just tell me. Just tell me what do I have to do to get you out of here? Are you the king of the Jews? And what have you done? You want to flip over to Mark chapter 15, verses 1 through 5? This is where we're going to say it in the book of Mark. As soon as it was morning, the chief priests held a consultation with the elders and the scribes and the whole council, and they bound Jesus, led him, and delivered over to Pilate. And Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" again. And he answered, "You've said so." And the chief priests accused him of many things. But Pilate again asked him, "Have you no answer to make? See how many charges they bring against you?" Jesus said no further word. Pilate was amazed. What's awesome about the gospel accounts is while they may be different, they paint this big tapestry. So that's why we're going to be jumping around in all four of them. But first, we saw somewhere that Jesus just stood before Pilate. Now you've got a picture of where Pilate is in his council. He's heard that he's being brought somebody who is a criminal of who says what. And then you've got a group of the high priests yelling, chanting of the crimes that he's committed. And Pilate looks at Jesus and he says, "Have you no answer for me?" Can't you feel the empathy in Pilate's words? "Have you no answer for me? Don't you see all the charges that they make against you? What am I supposed to do to help you?" And Jesus said nothing. You know why he said nothing? Because he wasn't supposed to say anything. If Jesus had said anything, that would have meant your salvation in heaven. Pilate absolutely 100% had the authority to turn over the chief priest and say, "This man is sinless. Release him now." But he didn't. And Jesus, I always envision Jesus just being just thrown on the floor, shackled, just on his knees, his head just bowed, just It's so much pain. Looking like the most pitiful human being you've ever seen. And Pontius is standing there and he's saying, how am I supposed to help you? We'll flip back over to John chapter 23. That is incorrect. John chapter 19. I apologize. Now you're really not going to like me. It was actually Luke chapter 23. Let's turn to Luke chapter 23. I'm so sorry. Luke chapter 23, verses 13 through 16 says this. This is after Pilate sent Jesus to Herod. Jesus sits, has already been sitting before Pilate. He's knelt down and just in agony. He's been beaten. He's got people yelling in his ear saying that he's a criminal, that he deserves to die. He deserves to be crucified. And what does Pilate do? I've got it. This is how I can get him out of my hands. This is how I can be found just blameless of this. It won't be my fault anymore. I'll send him to Herod. Herod found no blame. Herod found no guilt. So here, Herod brings Jesus back to Pilate, and Jesus kneels again before Pilate. And all these people who had been yelling and accusing Jesus of just being a sinner, of being blasphemous, of being somebody who's evil, who's not the Son of God by any means. Pilate brings him over and he says, you brought me this man as one who is misleading the people. And after examining before you, behold, I didn't find this man guilty of any of your charges against him. And you know what? Neither did Herod, for he sent him back to us. Look, nothing deserving death has been done by him. Pilate was convicted. Pilate got it. He understood that Jesus had done nothing worthy of being beaten, worthy of being mocked at, worthy of being spit on, of being beaten up, of being stood up by the people who followed him. Jesus hadn't done anything, and Pilate has the advantage of seeing that. Pilate wasn't just convicted. And Pilate was confused. On one side of the spectrum, you've got two different sides of Pilate. You got the Pilate who's got to rule the people. You got the Pilate who is expected to do what the people want. That's his job. But then on the other side, you got a Pilate who's... I can't help but think that he feels God working in him. Pilate just wasn't some official. I really feel like that he was a person that God worked through. And so you have these two beings just fighting against each other. You've got this side of Pilate saying, you've got to convict him. You've got to crucify him. That's what your people want. And then you've got God working with him saying, you find no guilt in him. Two completely polar opposites. And so we looked in John chapter 8 at an account of Pilate and a conversation that he has with Jesus. Among Pilate's questioning, in verse 37, Jesus says, you say that I'm a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I've come to the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice. Pilate answered with a question. What is truth? Everybody who listens to him, everybody who listens to Jesus, listens to truth. Everybody who bears witness to Jesus, bears witness to truth. So we've already established that Pilate was convicted, but he's still standing before Jesus and he says, I'm torn. I can't help you and I can't help myself. And he asks the question, Jesus, what is truth? Because I just don't know anymore. You know what the absolute worst part of all of this? Pilate asked him that question. And there you see Jesus kneeling before him, bloodied up, beaten. Truth was there right in front of him. The truth of the world was on his knees at Pilate's fate in the flesh, right there in front of him. How many of us worry? You can raise your hand, I promise. It's not like, okay, good, 5 of us, that's great. Awesome. When you're discouraged with worry, when you're discouraged with anxiety, when you're discouraged with things like this, much like myself, do you ever find yourself looking for answers? All the time, I'm praying for answers. I'm praying for evidence. I've lived 21 years and a few months on this earth, and if there is one large thing that I've learned about myself, it's that I need the evidence in front of me to have the answer. I'm not going to believe you until I see the evidence right there. Until you can show me written in ink that what you're saying is truth, and it be like notarized or I don't know, I'm not going to believe you. You ever feel like that? Do you ever feel like that when you pray to God? That you're always looking for answers. God, please just help me to overcome this temptation. God, I'm looking for a job right now and I just really need your guiding hand. God, I may not be able to stay at Freed. I need you to help me. What answers are you looking for? You're looking for the final result. You're looking for God to come into your life and intercede and give you the answer right then and right there. Because that's your human nature. I sure know that's my human nature. And it kills me to be patient. It kills me to wait on the answer because I keep asking for it. And I keep looking for the answer. And I get to that point where I keep asking and I keep looking and I overlook the answer right in front of me. Jesus works through so many people in your lives, and I will bet you forget to acknowledge it. I wasn't going to say any names, but I'm going to pick on somebody. I'm going to pick on Ben. Ben Beaver's over here who led singing. Total goofball. I love him to death. One of the funniest guys I think I've ever met. But there have been so many times over this past year that I could just, and I've been terrible. I've been in a deep pit, and I've prayed for answers. I've prayed for truth, and I've prayed for Jesus to work through somebody just to show me, God, where am I supposed to go? Because man, I'm hurting. I'm hurting. I'm not seeing any answers. Then you see old Ben walking in the room with his glasses that have been super glued together, and Ben, man. It is blatantly obvious that Jesus works through them. It's so obvious, man. And there have been so many times that I've overlooked that. There have been so many times that I've looked at Ben and go, you are the last person I want to talk to right now. You are too happy for me right now. There have been so many times that I've ignored the answer, the truth that Jesus is giving to me, because I keep looking for the answer. I keep getting too wrapped up in my pursuit of the answer that I forget that Jesus has given me the answer right there. And I couldn't help but look at Pontius Pilate and just feel with him. And Pontius was struggling. Pilate was absolutely struggling because he had the fate of somebody who didn't deserve death laying in his hands. He didn't know what the answer was. He didn't know what the right answer was. He was searching. He was scrambling in his brain to figure it out. He was trying to find alternate solutions. But from the get-go, from the minute that Jesus walked into his council, the answer was right there. Let me go. Just like us, Pilate failed. We're gonna keep reading. Luke chapter 23, verses 18 through 25. So we have Pontius Pilate. Jesus has been sent back in front of Pilate. Pilate is just racking his brain. I don't know what to do. And so he takes Jesus and he takes him to the crowd, because there's no other option. In verse 18, they all cried out together, "Away with this man, and release us Barabbas," a man who had been thrown into prison for insurrection started in the city and for murder. And Pilate addressed them once more, desiring to release Jesus. But they kept shouting, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" And a third time he said to them, "Why? What evil has he done? I found no guilt deserving death. I'll punish him. I'll release him." But the crowd was urgent, demanding with a loud cries that he should be crucified, and their voices prevailed. So Pilate decided that their demand should be granted. He released the man who had been thrown into prison for insurrection and for murder, for whom they asked. And he threw Jesus right overboard. He threw Jesus right to the dogs. How many times do the voices of the world prevail? That's what sin is, right? The voices of the world prevailing against the silent whisper in your head of God. That's exactly the fight that was going on right now. The voices of the world were yelling at Pontius Pilate over here going, "Crucify him. You know what your job is. Get rid of him. Crucify him right now. You know that's your job." And then you've got Pontius Pilate over here. He said, "I can't." There's that little whisper in the back of his head that says, "You shouldn't do it. You know you're convicted." But then the voices prevail again. And those voices prevail against God. Whatever sin you struggle with in your life, whatever it might be, it's because the voices of this world prevail against you. If it's pride, I guarantee you it's because the people of this world, the voices of this world have told you, "Hey, you're pretty good at what you do." If you struggle with gossip, it's the voices of this world bringing that into your life. And it's the voices of this world that trump the voice of God that dwells within all who believe. How can you not sit there and how can you not identify with Pilate? You can just hear it in Pilate's voice. He says, "I found no wrong in this man. He doesn't deserve what you're asking him to do. How about this? I'll punish him and then I'll release him. But he doesn't deserve this." And Pilate releases him. I can't help but think that it's at this point that God turns his back on Jesus. Can you imagine the thoughts that go through Jesus' head at this point? The human side of Jesus looks at it and goes, "That was my last hope. That was my last chance to prevail against the terrible things that are about to happen to me. That was it for me. Father, let not thy will but yours be done." Jesus, he stood alone. And to make things worse, Pilate does something that's so just egregious, something that's absolutely just disgusting. Just as bad as spitting in Jesus' face. Matthew chapter 27, verses 24 through 26. And so when Pilate saw that he was gaining nothing, but that the riot was beginning, he took water. And he washed his hands before the crowd. And I want you to go back to the high and mighty Pilate that you saw before this. Because the crowd prevailed against him and he gave into the sin. You're looking at a whole new Pilate. Pilate goes and he washes his hands and he flicks his hands and he says, "My hands are innocent of this man's blood." And then, after he does that, he releases a murderer. Somebody who actually deserves death, whether it be in the flesh, but for sure in the spirit. Somebody who deserves death was released. Doesn't seem right. So just something's not adding up. But surely Pilate still got it in his heart to maybe no. Instead, Pilate goes and he puts his hand in his basin and he cleanses his hand and he says, "I'm innocent of this man's blood." Pilate was in a dark place. By this point, when the crowd had prevailed against him, when he had given into his sin, when he'd taken his fears and his insecurities and he acted upon them, and he became Pilate the Almighty, who could so give the fate of the Son of God, that he flicked the water from his hand, he said, "I've done what I was supposed to do." There's so many times that I can go back in my life where I can't find myself as even deserving to be called a Christian, even being deserving of being called a follower of Christ. And I've been so deep in sin before, or so it feels like, that I just wash my hands of Jesus and I say, "I'm done with you. You're not mine. I can do this on my own. I don't even need you." So Pilate said, "I wash my hands of you." Jesus was nothing more to Pilate than dirt that had accumulated under his fingernails. And that's exactly how you and I treat him. When we think we have it in control, when we think we are high and mighty, that we know how to do things our way or the highway, and we lose sight of our purpose, that Jesus Christ came to die for you, we clean our hands of Jesus. Say, "I don't need you." It's a shameful thing. Once Jesus is delivered over to the crowd, something incredible happens. Pilate had found himself in control, in a conundrum, and something that I feel like he questioned, something that he found himself in a moment of weakness, and Satan just peeked in that little hole, and he took control. Something else happened. Jesus was released to the crowd, and the crowd had him take this enormous cross. He had to carry it. He He had to carry that burden, and he was collapsing under it. It was so heavy. Not only was it just so heavy, think about the state that Jesus was in. When he was released, Pilate scourged him. You know what scourging is? It's getting lashes on the back, having your skin ripped from your bones. Jesus was in a fragile, fragile human state. But without a word, he took that burden because he knew he had to. He knew that it wasn't over yet. Somehow his body could find the strength to continue onward. But his purpose was not done yet. When Pilate gave him that cross, when the crowd gave him that cross, and they said, "March!" And they spat on him, and they yelled at him, and they accused him of things that were unspeakable. They accused him of things that were the truth. Not something that... They didn't accuse him of anything that was wrong. They accused him of something that was absolutely true. Something that should have convicted their hearts. I'll tell you right now, the only thing that can keep us from the truth of God is ourselves. It's our own stupid, foolish selves. Jesus is bearing that cross, and Pilate comes to him. And in John chapter 19, it reads, he said to the Jews, "Behold your king." And they cried out, "Away with him, crucify him." And Pilate said to him, "Shall I crucify your king?" And the chief priests answered and said, "We have no king but Caesar." There at the place of the skull called Golgotha, they crucified him with two others, one on either side, and Jesus between them. At that place, Pilate took the inscription that said, "Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews." And many Jews read the inscription, for the place where Jesus was crucified was near the city, and it was written in Aramaic and Latin and Greek. So the chief of priests of Jesus said to Pilate, "Don't write King of the Jews, but rather this man said, 'I am the King of the Jews.'" Pilate answered, "What I've written, I've written." This is where hope comes into play. This is where redemption comes into play. When I read this and I look at Pilate's character and I look at Pilate's actions, I can't help but think that Pilate is repentant. He knows what he's done. And he knows he can't take it back. So he takes the crime that Jesus has committed, the crime that... And he takes it and he puts it on the cross. Because that's the crime that Jesus was being crucified for. And those Jews looked at him and said, "Don't you dare put that. He's not the king. He's not our king. He's done nothing for us except blasphemy." And Pilate looks at him and he says, "What I've written, I've written. Because I've seen the truth." There is a chance of redemption for our souls. There's a chance for redemption of our heart. Even after we've fallen into the pits of sin. Even after sin has prevailed against God's voice, there is hope for you. There is hope for your heart because you can still stand before God and you can still say, "You're my king." Even as a sinner, you're my king. As I am a sinner, you are still my king. Have you ever wondered when Jesus was hanging there on the cross? We always know, we try to paint the picture ourselves of what Jesus actually went through, what Jesus felt, what Jesus needed, the pain that he felt. You ever read Psalm 22 and just looked at the words of David. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me? From the words of my groaning, my God, I cry by day, but I don't hear you answer. By night, I find no rest. I'm a worm. I'm not a man. I'm scorned by mankind, despised by people. All who seek me mock me. They make mouths at me. They wag their heads. He trusts in the Lord. Let him deliver himself. Let him rescue himself, for he delights in him. Yet you are he who took me from the womb. Be not far from me, for trouble is near. There's no one to help. Bulls encompass me. Their mouths wide open at me. The ravenous lion is roaring at me. I'm poured out like water. My bones are at a joint. My heart is like wax. It's melted into my breast. My strength is dried up. My tongue sticks to my jaws. And you lay me in the dust of death. Dogs encompass me. And a company of evildoers encircles me. They pierce my hands and feet. You can count my bones. They stare and then gloat over me. And they divide my garments among them, and they cast lots for them. If ever we could look in the mind of Jesus when he was standing on the cross, or when he was nailed to that cross for your sin, that's it. If ever you can take a look into the mind of Jesus and just wonder what he feels, the human side of him, I'm sure he was tempted with hatred at that point. I'm positive that the human side of him felt hatred. But in spite of everything, he said, Father, just forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. At the beginning of this lesson, I asked, how do you perceive yourself? How do people look at you and perceive you? When people looked at Jesus, they saw somebody who was a joke. When they saw Pilate, they saw somebody who was of authority. When they saw Stephen, they stoned him. What do people see, and how do they perceive you? Are you able, when you see the truth in front of you, are you able to accept it, or are you just so preoccupied with worrying and being in control of it that you keep looking for the truth and you never find it? When you feel like you have everything under control, do you wash your hands of Jesus and you say, I don't need you anymore? Do you let the voice of sin prevail against you, the voice of the world creep into your head and overtake you? Stand before you right now, and I'll repent. That's me. Every last bit of that is me. We're gonna sing a song of invitation, and I know I probably went over. I'm sorry, but you don't have to come and sit on these benches to be cleansed of your sin. Or to make a reconciliation with God, to come and acknowledge his truth. If all it takes is you just standing and singing these songs and reflecting on God's love for you and praying to him, do it. But if you need the prayers of this awesome assembly of people, this community that we have, because you feel like you can't find the truth, or you feel like you do wash your hands of Jesus, or you feel like your heart's just not convicted anymore, this group of people will pray for you. The advantage that Pilate had, that to this day I'm always going to take away with me, the advantage that Pilate had that we don't, is that Pilate knew that Jesus was the Son of God right then, right there. For all of us who are imperfect, And for all of us who stumble every day of our lives, it literally took Jesus to die for those who were evil in heart to be convicted. I pray that you find that conviction in your life, that you find that truth that you need. If you need the prayers of these people, if you just need a hug, if you just need somewhere to cry and just pour out your heart to God, come up here. You need to come. I'm always standing somewhere.